Hello and welcome back to Scottish Independence Podcasts. A bonus Tuesday episode for you this week. It's All Change Again at Bute House.
Hello everyone. We're doing this on the 29th of April and at lunchtime today, Humza Yousaf gave a press conference saying he would stand down as First Minister as soon as the SNP have chosen a new leader, and that leader will then be put forward as the new First Minister. But until then, he is the First Minister, but yeah, going to stand down. So, wow, that's quite a day, wasn't it?
Quite a day. As it happened, we were due to interview Bill Ramsey and Isabel Lindsay about something else. So, of course, we couldn't resist speaking to them, getting their first reactions on the news. And Bill is the convener of the SNP trade union group, so it's quite an interesting perspective. Before we introduce Bill and Isabel, there's a couple of clips that we just want to play. One is Patrick Harvey's question in Holyrood at First Minister's Questions, literally just after he'd lost his job. The Bute House agreement had been ended that morning. And the second is kind of Humza's response to that in the beginning of his speech.
Thank you, Presiding Officer. Who does the First Minister think he is pleased most today? Is it Douglas Ross, Fergus Ewing or Alex Salmond? And more to the point, which of them does he think he can rely on for a majority in Parliament now?
First Minister.
Presiding Officer, obviously Patrick Harvey and I spoke this morning, and I go back to the points and the comments that I made this morning. I do thank Patrick Harvey and Lorna Slater for their contribution to this government, to their contribution to this country, and I think we can take great pride in what the Bute House Agreement has achieved in almost 3 years.
But only 4 days later, at Bute House, another press conference.
Last week, I stood here to announce the ending of the cooperation agreement between the SNP and the Greens, the Bute House Agreement, and that the SNP would seek to govern as a minority government. I made that decision as leader of the SNP, as I believed ending the Bute House Agreement was the right one for the party I lead. And I still do believe that to be the case. But most importantly, I believe it was the right decision for the country. My hope was to continue working with the Greens in a less formal arrangement as the SNP moved into a new phase of minority government. Unfortunately, in ending the Bute House Agreement in the manner that I did, I clearly underestimated the level of hurt and upset that caused Green colleagues. For a minority government to be able to govern effectively and efficiently, trust when working with the opposition is clearly fundamental. And while a route through this week's motion of no confidence was absolutely possible, I am not willing to trade my values and principles or do deals with whomever simply for retaining power.
My first reaction to all this kerfuffle, first of all, I was quite annoyed at the Greens because I thought they've stirred this and there was no need for it. You know, that was my sort of gut reaction. And, you know, then suddenly occurred to me, if we thought of a different situation where you've got a voluntary union of two partners, one big and one small, and the small one says, I just want to check with my members or population whether they still want to be in this union or not. And the other one said, you can't do that.
If the other one said, you can't do that, you're off, get off, go on, scram.
Yeah, that was what I thought as well.
I know what you mean. I started off thinking, I was a bit taken aback at it. I just not so much that he might want to end the Bute House Agreement, more the way that it seemed to be happening. I mean, it's very difficult to tell because you never quite know, given the state of our media in Scotland, you never quite know how accurate it's being reported. However, that's why he's had to resign, isn't it? That was a big mistake.
And you can't doubt the and the shock, I think, and the hurt that Lorna Slater and Patrick Harvey, it was written all over their faces. They absolutely were shocked. And it's awful for them. And overall, I am disappointed. I liked the fact that they were working together. What Lorna said in one of her interviews was that people like to see their politicians working together. And we do. However, we are where we are.
Yeah, we are where we are. So let's carry on then and find out what our two guests thought.
The big news this morning, we're recording this within an hour or so of Humza Yousaf having made his statement that he's stepping down as First Minister. So do we want to give a sort of first response to that, Bill? Do you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, I am, for my sins, the convener of the SNP Trade Union Group, the largest affiliate of the party. One of the things that the Trade Union Group intend to do, although it's early days, is organise a Trade Union Group hustings for the candidates for leadership. It will be, we assume, similar to the leadership hustings we organise in conjunction with the SDUC and the National, separate from any leadership hustings that the party organise, and focus on the trade union and economic issues, all the areas that our members would want to talk about. As it happens, there's a national executive tonight to talk about timescales and technicalities and things like that. Speaking to you now, I don't know who the candidates will be. I mean, there's been talk at lunchtime about Kate Forbes and John Swinney. Others may well throw their hats into the ring. And if there was to be, let us call it a coronation of somebody, then the trade union group would still be holding a meeting for its members in a slightly different format, of course, where whoever is the First Minister, we would be inviting him or her to come to speak to the trade union group members so they could put their views and concerns and get answers from whoever is the First Minister.
I do wonder if having the hustings in private within the SNP ranks, and I'm not an SNP member, but might have been better the last time round, because my abiding memory of the leadership contest was how many times candidates' soundbites were used against them by opposition members in Parliament. And I think if they hadn't had that discussion in public, in front of everybody, it wouldn't have given ammunition that really would have been better dealt with behind closed doors.
There's a bit of a mix of that. I mean, I do believe that the mainstream media are going to run the story from a unionist perspective and also from their particular agenda. You get an example. There was BBC Scotland minutes ago covering, as rightly so, looking at it. And they had Douglas Fraser on, and he was talking about the CBI's views, and he was talking about small business views. And at the tail end, he mentioned the press release put out by the Scottish Ross Foyle, the Trade Union Congress. It should have been the other way around. That's how the BBC operates. They'll have a narrative they'll want to run it with. They'll want to run with issues around gender recognition. We'll want to focus more on issues around economics, not because that isn't an important issue, but because the airing, you know, for every minute you'll get about the retread on this issue, we'll be lucky if we get seconds on the substantive issues that the Scottish public are and Scottish workers are interested in. A detail about this is, and this is an important point from the trade union group perspective, I want to stress this, we will be looking at it from the position of SNP policy. And it's important to realise that the SNP, like any other social democratic party in Western Europe, when they're in power, there's party policy and then there's government policy. And the two may well differ to some extent. And the politicians who become the government have to make themselves responsible to the party and the party policies there. And there are some policies that have emerged over the GRA, which I'm not clear that they actually went through party policy. That does not mean to say that I'm taking an issue on these. And as trade union group convener, it would not be appropriate for me to comment on that. But I'm just talking about the technical reality. There are some policies on some of these areas that have been taken forward by the Scottish Government that haven't been tested in front of membership at conference, for instance.
Well, what did you think yourself, Bill, of how Humza described the situation that he was in? I mean, obviously, he acknowledged that the way that he'd pulled the rug out from under the Bute House Agreement, you know, had left him in that kind of untenable position. But I noticed he also said he could have got through the vote of no confidence in himself, but he wasn't prepared to do it in the way that he would have had to, which he didn't say, but I took that was a reference to he didn't want to end up being beholden, as it were, to the ALBA party. I may be wrong in that, but what did you think about the tone, you know?
See, that's the point about the trade union group. I'm more interested in what they've got to say about policy than tone. So what we'll be interested in is what they've got to say about the economy. you know, the extent to which we depart from Rachel Reeves. I mean, Rachel Reeves, her economic policy can be summed up in fact, three words: grow the economy. She says, grow the economy. That's what Rachel Reeves says. So from the trade union group point of view, we'll be interested in what candidates have got to say on economic policy that goes beyond the three words of, you know, grow the economy, to see the extent to which good policies passed by large majorities at the SNP conferences appear on the to-do list of the government as it goes forward. On the issue of, the issues that fell out with the Greens, from what I can see, it started when Patrick Harvey took issue with the Cass report. It started to spiral after that, as far as I can see. Where the trade union group stands, it stands on party policy and the policy developed by the trade union group membership collectively when we have an opportunity to do so, and the policy decided by the party. And in that sense, the trade union group will, when I say we'll be focusing on economic issues, I'm not saying these other issues aren't important, but I was at SDUC Congress as a delegate last week, the week before, and as always, Congress dealt with equality issues. Why is it that the SDUC Congress can have a civilised debate about these issues without having civil war? I mean, that in and of itself, I think, is an interesting point. And when these issues are discussed, they should be discussed from the point of view of policy as opposed to TikTok warfare.
I think you're right. Probably the Cass report did factor in the growing kind of disagreements, shall we say, between the Greens and the Bute House and agreement and the SNP. But the bigger one, or the one that got more airtime, was actually about the changing the stance on the climate targets, wasn't it? Although I thought that was unfair. I mean, if you're not going to make them, you may as well just acknowledge that and then start again, having reset it. But
that's true. But one of the problems of the previous regime was Nicola overpromised. Nicola was very good at spin, on delivery, not so much. The issues that the party are facing today started long before Patrick Harvey's comments about the Cass report.
They did, but we actually covered that on last week's Bits and Pieces podcast, and it was back when SNP was in a minority administration and they had proposed a target of 70%, and Labour, Lib Dems, Greens and Tories all demanded that they increase it.
So yes,
that unreachable target was actually not the choice of whoever was in, you know, Nicola Sturgeon, whoever was in there. They were pushed into it because they were in a minority administration. And then the fact that it hasn't been achieved, well, they kind of knew at the beginning that it wasn't going to be achieved. And to me, the spin in there is, where do you leap from a target as something to aim at because it drives your action and it inspires you, to a target being something you're never going to achieve, and if you don't, you're going to get crucified for it?
I mean, maybe 75% was achievable, but only with a Holyrood chamber that was prepared to back the kind of actions that you needed to do. And then if there wasn't that backing coming through, then you're always just kind of falling away from that.
I've said this for many, many years. We are a Scottish political party looking for independence, setting up a separate Scottish state. But we share some of the cultural features of other mainstream parties in Britain and in Europe. And as the political right since Margaret Thatcher in the 1970s have started to dominate agendas, social democratic parties, all of them, have used the press release. I mean, Blair and Mandelson were very good at writing press releases and setting targets as opposed to trying to take forward delivery. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, the SNP has been caught up in that, in setting targets that, given the cuts in the British state's falling apart, as Professor Danny Dorling in his book Shattered Nation shows, Britain is literally falling apart. And under those circumstances, it's important, in my view, and this is a personal view, for SNP administrations to start to say, vote for us and we will do what we can to protect you and mitigate the idea that improvement is on the agenda when we're in the British state, and this is a personal view. It's becoming increasingly hollow.
Maybe bring Isabel in at this point. Yeah. You've sat there very patiently. What are you thinking about it all?
Well, I think many of the problems that Hamza had were inherited from the previous 10 years, but then he was selected and promoted as the continuity candidate, and he was narrowly elected on that basis. And that was the huge error, because there should have been at that time a promotion of the notion of fresh start, new regime, not just in terms of ministers, but the background teams and also the state of the party internally. Because lots of, as we now know, but many people knew then, the mess that was there in the party as well. So instead of the fresh start thing, what we got was some new faces, new first minister, but the continuity thing was there as well. This was because, again, Sturgeon was so good at the soundbite, at the promising, but there was a lack of really serious policy work there, and a tendency to outsource policies. I mean, it really was disgraceful that KPMG was asked to do the policy work, the basic policy work on the proposal for the care service in Scotland. Mm-hmm. And on the environmental issues, again, it's the lack of clear, specific planning. A few years now since Commonweal did a lot of serious work on an environmental plan that was costed our common home. What that says, yes, there are huge costs there, but this is the trajectory you have to go. These are the steps you have to take. This is what it will cost. Now, I don't think the public would be particularly upset if you don't meet certain targets, if they know what the route map is, if they know in detail what the plan is and can see that you've got to there, you haven't quite got to there, but it's quite clear where you're going. The Sturgeon government showed no interest in approaching all kinds of, I mean, Commonweal, they wouldn't touch with a barge pole. It doesn't matter the quality of the work, but they would go to Charlotte Street Partners, use Andrew Wilson as an advisor. So there were these problems that were there, and we didn't get the fresh start. Now, the key now is there has got to be a complete fresh start promotion if there's going to have some hope for real recovery until the Holyrood elections, and in the hope it has some positive impact on the general election, although that will be difficult in the timescale. And I see no option in terms of the range of candidates than Kate, because the other candidates we've got, they don't carry conviction as people who will decisively make real change in the Scottish government. And I think from a left perspective, as Bill was saying, the pressure's come on for the definition in a range of key policy issues. And there are a fair number of people in what we might call Kate's team who are certainly not on the right.
She did say she wouldn't put herself forward again, didn't she, at the time of the first leadership?
Immediately afterwards, yes, but that has long since...
Different now.
Careful plans have been made for quite some time now.
One point about Kate, I mean, I wasn't going to raise that because I'm not going to, you know, the trade union group didn't take a position on any candidate, because the only way we could do that would be to consult our members over a period of time, though we did have a hustings, and we allowed our members, gave our members as much voice as we could. After all, we are an organisation that covers the entire country, but on the resources of a party branch. I mean, that's the reality of the resources of the trade union group, though it has to be said, headquarters gave us a bit of financial help in relation to our inputs to Congress in terms of a fringe meeting and stall, etc., at the STUC this year. But that said, I think from a trade union point of view, Kate will have to come up with some clear answers in relation to some economic positions in that regard. I think that's important to say, because I'm not suggesting that Kate would do this, but if she were to turn around and just simply come out with a mantra of grow the economy, that will hack it. It won't hack it. I'll be interested to see what she's got to say about using, well, two things, the road to independence, but there's also issues around the economy and the SDUC, where we are at the moment. We are where we are, and we're in the devolved Scotland, and there are powers, existing powers, that the Scottish Parliament could use and deploy to go after some extra funding, not from ordinary taxpayers, but from big business who make big profits. And it's about time the Scottish Government started to face up to some of these large interests who, and there's plenty of academic research to show there are areas of the Scottish economy where large profits are made and extracted from Scotland. Unless the Scottish Government is seen to try to stop that, then we're going to continue to face challenges.
We want to see a clear policy coming on land reform, on local democracy, and there's effective policies on land reform and land taxation can produce significant additional income. These are the kind of policies, the power is there to act on, and we really do want to see that emerging. And yes, taking on a range of vested interests in Scotland. Now, I would like to see the word growth banned. Let's use the word development, economic development, because it's the quality of what has done is done. You can improve people's lives substantially, not just by more and more that goes into figures that look like growth, but much of which may be completely negative. And we've got to get that kind of rethink and a fresh kind of language. And again, this is something that senior politicians and parties can do if they have the vision to do it.
I agree with everything Isabel said except one thing. The optics of that, we're dealing with a big business that owns the mainstream media. The concept of like degrowth is it's like defunding the police. To ordinary working class people, that's a suicidal strapline. And I'm not saying that Isabel is saying that, but the mainstream media will twist it into that. So, but there are challenges. But the point about growth is there is growth at the moment. There's been growth continuously, but there's inequality. The richer are getting richer, and the bottom 20% of the population in particular, but everybody is getting, you know, is getting poorer. And that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed to some extent now by the Scottish Government. It needs to take some of the policies of the STUC, like its main composite on the economy. They need to take some of those policies and take them forward in the areas that Isabel said. You've got Big Whisky, which is like Big Pharma. They make billions, and I'm not just talking about the $6 billion a year that my beloved party produces a leaflet on. It's at least five times that. So there are areas there that need to be investigated as well.
Now that we've had the announcement from Humza, does the vote of no confidence in the government still go ahead, the one that Labour were proposing, or does that fall?
Well, it's up to them to decide, isn't it? I mean, from what the BBC were signalling earlier on, just before we started talking, they seemed to be signalling that Scottish Labour would keep that in place. I mean, obviously the one against Humza, that'll go. There might still be one about Scottish government, but then you'd think at that point that surely the Greens are they going to vote against the government that they were part of, then abstain, and then it just falls by the wayside.
Yeah, if it's a vote against the Scottish government up until last week, and I assume the speeches of people who would be moving that would be talking about the record of the Scottish government. It's a record that the Greens were involved in as well. Good parts and bad parts. Folk can take different views on it. But one would assume, but then again, that's speculation. I mean, it's only
2 hours.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's certainly been a very interesting day so far, isn't it? It's probably going to carry on, actually. And talking about the economy, I mean, yeah, to get away from thinking about always, you know, increasing growth. But then we had a minister for a circular economy. I mean, Lorna Slater, that was one of her jobs. And when that was announced, I remember thinking, wow, that's a move in the right direction. But that's also an idea and a set of possible policies. It's really difficult, difficult to get your head round, and then even more difficult to actually start, you know, convincing people about and explaining to folks.
That bill has its third reading tomorrow. It's only been 2 hours since the announcement. Already we all have views and opinions. We're already speculating who the leader's going to be.
It won't change, no doubt.
But thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Yeah, that was good. It was just, you know, fortunate that we had a time scheduled to talk to Bill and Isabel and then could ask them this as well. And thanks to both of them for being prepared to do that. And we're both going to be in Glasgow on Saturday at the march that sets off from Kelvin Way. And if you're there, we'll be there with our microphones, and we might come and ask you what you think about everything that's happened this week.
That'd be really good. There's been some criticism of the fact we've had two marches a fortnight apart in Glasgow, but this is a time we need to start setting these things aside, don't we? This is a time to show that the independence movement, regardless of who's in Holyrood, the independence movement isn't going away and is much bigger than an individual. So
And I mean, the march the other weekend, the rally, I thought the rally was really good. The rally's had a lot of praise, but certainly there weren't as many people in the march and involved in it as there has been in the past. So this weekend, again in Glasgow, we've got another opportunity. Let's get ourselves out there.
See you Saturday.
See you Saturday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to our Bonus Tuesday podcast. And don't forget to come back on Friday for our normal Friday podcast. Catch you later. Bye now.